This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Welcome back to The Junks. We're brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of The Junkies. We're very happy to be joined in studio right now by Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza, the writers and directors of Warfare. It releases wide in theaters April 11th. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We know you guys have been busy with screenings and media tours, so we appreciate the time.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course.
So, Alex, you started as a novelist, I'm reading, and when did you know you wanted to get into, did you think when you first started you'd want to get into screenwriting and doing movies and directing?
I didn't really think about it at all back then. I wrote a book. I was a backpacker, and I wrote a book about backpacking.
Oh, nice. Mm.
Wow.
Where did you backpack?
Southeast Asia, mainly. And particularly the Philippines. And then the book got made into a film, and as soon as I saw a film being made, I thought, oh, that's what I want.
This is what it is, right?
Yeah. It's like a big group of people. It looked like a lot of fun. You write a book on your own. Films you only make with a large group of people. I thought, that's what I want to do. So then I just switched instantly. Wrote a screenplay 28 days later, zombie film.
Mm-hmm. Great movie.
Just stayed in it.
Yeah.
How'd you know how to write the screenplay? Do you have to, like, Google how do you write a screenplay? Or you just...
Almost, but the same way as writing a book, I would take books off the shelves and look at them.
Right.
So when it came to, like, how to do dialogue, he said, she said, whatever.
Right.
I would just look at how other people did it. And then with a screenplay, I got hold of a screenplay and read it and thought, okay, so that's how it's laid out. And,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, Ray, give us your background. As when did you know you wanted to become a U.S. Navy SEAL? How did that... Mm. Germinate.
Like, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you for your service. I mean, not only is it a sacrifice, obviously, to go into the military, but then you're like, I want to be at the highest level. Like, when did you know you wanted to become a SEAL?
Yeah, it was pretty early on. I mean, I grew up playing sports, baseball, as a kid, all the way through high school, played travel ball. So I was always very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And an older brother who played baseball, 4 years older, so I was always trying to compete with him.
Right.
But so I knew I wanted to serve. I just didn't know what, and there wasn't a lot of information on the SEAL teams, but, you know, going through different units, I just came across, you know, this Navy SEALs portion of this book, and just something was, it just attracted me. I didn't know what it was. So I started getting older, started to do more research, and it was that time to sign up for the Navy, went to the recruiter, got more information, and some of it was a leap of faith. Once I got there, I started to learn more about the maritime component of the SEAL teams. The other overachievers, other you know, very competitive mindsets. And I felt it just like dovetailed right in.
So for you as a SEAL, which was harder, the physical or the mental? Because look, what I've learned is through mostly movies, sometimes books, that the mental can almost be tougher than the physical portion of what they put you through to get to that level of being a SEAL.
Yeah, it's the mental 100%. Like anybody could do one day of buds, right? You throw, like, you know, people come out, sports teams,
fit guys, or whatever,
Olympic teams. They come out and they do these little things. Yeah. Like, oh, I didn't.
Tiger Woods comes out.
Sure, yeah. And I've seen him on the compound a few times.
Okay,
you know, great dude.
Mm-hmm.
But,
really?
Yeah, I mean, he's respectful. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
to those guys, he's going to be respectful.
Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. He was kind, and you know, people who were interested in meeting him, you know, he took the time to say hello. But you know. It's the grind, right? It's a slow grind of every day for 6 months. And that's just the basic. And then you go on to advance, which is SEAL qualification training, which is like another 8 months.
Right.
And so it's a long, long.
Isn't it a process day. Even before you even get there? Because I know guys that have tried to do it. Mm-hmm. And like for a year, there's like legendary trainers out there that train you before you even try to do it type thing. Did you have to go through that?
Or no, really exist. You know, when you got there, they give you all the tools that you need, really. Uh-huh. I mean, like, I get it, wanted to know, preparing, but sometimes that can not
too much
be in their favor. Yeah, because it starts to, I don't know, I almost said the F word.
Yeah.
It starts to do a mind trick on you where it's almost like, hey, you're going to go to the dentist, get your wisdom teeth pulled out. It's more about the thought of it that's actually more scary than the doing it itself.
All right, so let's get to how you two hook up. So you're a novelist, movie maker. You start getting into helping out in movies as a military consultant, which I don't know how you make that transition. You must meet somebody. How does that work?
Active Valor, which just came out, I think, in 2011 or 10. That was my exposure to filmmaking or this version of storytelling, which was very compelling to me. That's how I got into the industry.
Got you.
So
then you were a military advisor to Peter Berg.
Mm-hmm.
Lone Survivor.
Yep, that was my
and
second.
By the way, that's a great movie, Lone Survivor.
Yeah, thank you.
But so, man, you've had some unbelievable experiences, man. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, thank you.
So let me ask Alex this. So Alex, you're one of the writers of Warfare. Obviously, it's in theaters April 11th. This movie is basically culled from Ray's experiences. You don't have a book or like a file to go back on. You basically just have to, I guess, interview Ray and talk about his experiences that he had and that his brothers he was fighting alongside, you know, in that spot. Like, what was that challenge like for you to come up with a screenplay where you basically have to just lean on his experiences instead of a book or something else?
Yeah, for all the details.
Well, it wasn't like writing a normal screenplay, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really writing. I was listening. I think just different sort of skill set. It began with Ray and I sitting down for a week. Ray lived back then, sort of homeless now, but lived in Los Angeles. And we just sat down together for 1 week, and Ray taught me through everything in as much detail as possible.
How did you know that this particular story was perfect for a film?
Didn't know that, but knew that Ray wanted to tell this particular story. And we had sort of dovetailed interests. I wanted to do a very accurate, very honest film. So I went to Ray, who I'd got to know by then, and said, is there a story you would want to use in such a film? And so he had this story.
I think all of us that have seen it, and you know, I'm reading reviews and others, the one word everyone always, I think, uses is intense, the intensity of it. How do you capture that? You make the most mundane things, right? You're sitting there on the edge of your seat as your sniper guy is there, and he's just like got the little muscle thing, right? Because he's there for hours, or just the sipping of the water. And I'm sitting there as a viewer, and I'm going, oh,
something's coming.
Yeah, like the building
because
of the tension.
They're building up the most mundane things.
Yeah. Do you know, the honest answer to that is that I think that, say you take a big action scene from a big movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say I'd lay a bet most times people are watching that sequence feeling bored.
Yeah.
Because they've seen it before and they're almost just waiting for it to end. Mm. Their adrenaline levels are not spiking.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because they've been through it. It's like a sort of funny dance. It's like a ritual. They've just been through the ritual too many times.
Right.
To care. If you do it on reality and people pick up, hang on a sec, this film is not working by the normal rules of normal films, suddenly someone scratching their head might have a different level of
intensity
and meaning. And you don't know. Is that guy about to die? Is about to
right.
show up?
Every moment,
is that
you keep
the
waiting.
Last thing you're about to see about this? So it has a whole other language, which even in a big, yeah.
What I was struck by was, I felt like I was like in the room with Ray and all of his, you know, comrades. Like you feel like you're right there as everything's happening, as everything's unfolding. Was that like a conscious effort as you were writing and directing Warfare to basically place the audience right in there with your group as it was happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think our guidance or like our light tower essentially was Elliot. Elliot doesn't remember when it happened, so I almost wanted like to approach it like looking at a microscope for him because I wanted him to see what we saw, hear what we heard. So that kind of laid everything out of how detailed we were going to be about it.
Can I ask you just the answer might just be CGI. How do you do the jet scene?
CGI.
Oh, it is CGI.
That
was incredible.
There was no jet. We got to fly that low and that far.
Yeah, and then how do you choose the locations? Like, I'm watching the movie. It's intense. But then I'm also thinking, like, how do they make this thing happen?
We built it. That was just outside London, and we discussed shooting it in the Middle East in certain places. But actually, all we'd get to keep was the sky. And the sky's the sky, pretty much wherever you are in the world, right? So we built it in London, and we tried to build a film set which was like a location. So when you walked onto that street or into that house, it was as if you're walking into a real street or a real house.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I know you probably have tons of sound engineers or whatever, but the jet's there for, I don't know, 3 seconds maybe? A couple times in the film, the sound quality and the CGI, it's so realistic. You know, kind of like what you were talking about. You feel like you're in that experience.
Well, we had Ray always there to say, well, this is what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Were you...
I'm sorry, it was all filmed in London?
It was all filmed in London.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Were you, just from reading about it, it doesn't seem like it was, but were you? It doesn't seem like you were trying to make a political stance one way or the other, anti-war, pro-war, whatever, but it does scream out at you the atrocities of war, which I do think is important for people to see and understand.
Copy that.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you to watch the movie, to relive the experience?
No, it was harder to film it. Because I already had to unpack all these emotions that I have been pushing down for almost 20 years. So it was therapeutic. So it's still difficult to watch sometimes, but not as hard as it was filming it. Elliot was there. Some of the guys in real life were there to help us film it. So, there's a lot of discussions and these feelings that had to be addressed.
When you enlisted and you had these, you know, you were challenged or whatever, you were always competitive, did you realize what you were getting into?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. But even the ones that were telling me at the time was pre-9/11.
Yeah.
They had seen combat. They probably read books, but it wasn't from experience. It was just...
Right.
You know, we train, we do these, we learn skill sets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you don't know it. And, you know, they set up training scenarios to try to mimic that, but it's all just anecdotal.
Right. I mean, it's not until the S hits the fan and it's real. Correct. When you're in the middle of it, do you feel any regret? Like, why am I doing this?
There's tons of regrets. Yeah. It can be as small as, like, I should have went left instead of right, or I should have moved faster. I wish I would have trained harder ahead of time. I wish I would have mentally prepared better. Or just you know, when something that catastrophic happens, you definitely start going through, like, what could I have done better? So that's kind of part of the therapy, decades later.
Were any of the actors former military? Was there anybody former military? There was?
There were
a couple?
Which one?
Yeah, there were.
Yeah. So some of the...
Oh, the British guys.
Yeah.
There was a few British guys.
Oh, there were? Okay.
We're joined in studio by Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza, the writers and directors of Warfare. It's in theaters April 11th. So I found out this nugget that Alex apparently at times completely removed himself as well as the studio because he didn't want anybody who didn't have the real life experiences that Ray and his group had. Like, was that difficult at all for you to just step back because you're a writer, you're a director, like you're used to being like super involved with everything. Was that hard for you to just take a hands-off approach there?
It wasn't at times, it was throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I did not allow myself and I did not allow anybody else to have input into what you could call the story. So nobody was allowed to say anything about the sequence of events or what happened who was not there. Mm-hmm. So that's started like that at the beginning and ended like that at the end. And The only people who were allowed to have that kind of input was Ray and other people who were in or next to that house at that time. Mm.
And you guys obviously linked up with A24, the studio. Like, they've had remarkable success, Everything Everywhere All at Once, won an Academy Award for Best Picture. You did Civil War for A24 previously. So, like, a good marriage there between you guys and A24.
They're super trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Not always true in film land.
Mm-hmm. Hard to find sometimes.
Yeah.
It can be. Yeah. I would imagine. Absolutely.
And so when they said, very early on, I said, look, it's a strange film. We'll make it as cheap as we can, but we need, like, total freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is allowed to give a note except Ray or his colleagues. They got it. They immediately mm-hmm. got it. And Ray and I were responsible. We made it for a price. We made it sensibly. We made it on budget, on time. And they were just happy.
By the way, we should say a couple of us loved Ex Machina.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Loved it.
Great thank movie. You.
Fantastic.
So have you been pleased so far with the early reception?
Pleased and relieved. Yeah,
yes.
Because it's a very strange, intense movie, but it's also like a really personal movie. Like,
right.
I can't stress enough. Imagine me and Ray flying out to San Diego for the first time to show it to the group of guys who were there,
mm-hmm. right?
And some of their colleagues. And you suddenly realize you know what we've done it as carefully as possible, but we're holding the worst day of these people's lives sort of in our hands. And my industry, and now Ray's industry as well, has a long track record of screwing with people's lives and taking liberties and
right. How did they all receive it?
Right. Yeah, what was that
have a brotherhood there. How did they all receive it? Were there different reactions?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of them came out to assist, not all of them, but they, some comments were that's about as close as we can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's what I remember. That's what it felt like. Thank you for doing that. So yeah, comments like that. Yeah.
Mm. Well, that's gotta feel good, right?
Because it was for Elliot initially. You know, there's some secondary, tertiary kind of effects of that, but yeah, I mean, Elliot was the main reason everybody knew about that, and you know, the interviews that we had to do, it was in support of making this very accurate. So yeah, it felt good to know that he approved of it. Absolutely.
Do you see more like hookups in the future? Do you have you mined for more information that there's more stuff there?
What am I allowed to say? He's got a killer project
that he's working on.
But
I think we'll always be there. Yeah, hopefully one day. But I think we're always there if he ever needs anything. Vice versa, you know,
right?
I think there's a relationship there.
You got a lot of movies in you.
I want to give back to the community that provided me. You know, though there were bad times, there's a lot of relationships and skills that I have mm-hmm. that I use in the film industry now. But yeah, there's stories, you know, a 20-year war. It's a really long war. It's a lot of stories.
Right.
A lot of people were lost, and I think families need closure. So if I can help provide that.
I don't need to get too personal here, but how do you do mentally each day? How are you?
Now I'm good. You know, it was a struggle. We're very, you know, we're competitive. I don't like admitting that I'm broken or there's something wrong with me, because I'm not supposed to be that way. So I had to first recognize that there was a problem. It took time for me personally. I didn't have a huge safety net mm-hmm. getting out like some people do, which is great. It took a while, but the friends, they were always there, and I just needed to like open my eyes mm-hmm. and see that help.
And you said this whole process is therapeutic. This is a joke, but maybe mm-hmm. the next movie you could do is a rom-com.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. You got a rom-com in you?
I think I can pull off a rom-com. Yeah.
Alex and Ray, we appreciate the time. It's Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza, the writers and directors of Warfare. It's gripping. It's intense. It's intimate. You need to go out and see it.
It's real.
When it's definitely real and authentic. Go out and see it when it's in theaters April 11th. Thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We definitely appreciate it. It's Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza. Warfare hits theaters April.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
11th. So the interview with Alex Garland and Ray Mendoza went really well, I think. Warfare is going to be in theaters April 11th. Go out and see it. It's riveting. It's intense. It's authentic.
You can't say the word intense enough.
Yeah.
If you like edge of your seat stuff and like you want to, you know.
So it all went swimmingly. Okay, we took pictures, shook hands,
glad-handed. Did you screw
up? I didn't do anything.
Something with Valdez.
Valdez may have just torpedoed everything that we just
poured
in.
All the goodwill?
Yeah. So
what happened?
So let me set the scene. So as everybody's milling around, Valdez walks up to me and Drab in the producer's studio, and he goes, Alex Garland did 28 days later. Then he asks, was he involved with 28 years later, which is a sequel that's coming out, I think, in 25 or 26. Yeah,
the trailer dropped probably like a month, maybe 2 months ago, and it looks silly.
I believe Drab and I both said, we don't think he's involved with that, but I think he was involved 28 weeks later, which is the sequel.
Cakes is like tomahawking my chest going, yes, Ricky, yes.
So
28 weeks later, 28 days later.
So then Valdez scurries out of the studio.
You had to have a little anecdote.
And he just couldn't leave well enough alone.
Yeah. So I went out there to shake his hand, thank him, thank all the PR people for coming in. And
he seemed
guys
so happy.
And I go up to him and I said, I watched the trailer for 28 years later. It looks amazing. Yeah. And then he shakes my hand and he goes, that's not me.
He's an intense guy.
Yeah.
That dude, Alex Garland, he really liked us. He actually said to me, he said, thank you guys so very much.
Yeah. He's very
nice. For taking this the right way or whatever. Because, you know, it's an intense movie about a very serious thing.
Right.
He's an intense guy.
He's an accomplished guy.
He takes his work seriously and he wants you to take his work seriously.
I had a you got the wrong dude moment.
Yeah, you definitely did.
Well, not only that, I mean, every person he meets probably brings up 28
of
weeks
course.
Later.
So,
I mean,
so
you find
good.
Something new to ask him about.
Well, I was asking him about 28 years later.
You couldn't ask about Ex Machina. I mean, just throw him a curveball here and there, please.
Well, he did Civil War as well.
He did Civil War too.
And I saw that. That was good.
Yeah.
But the whole 28 days thing is just, it's complicated and it's confusing because there's another movie called 28 Days with Sandra Bullock.
Well, that's definitely way different than 28 Days Later.
I understand that. But I'm saying that 28 Days is in a bunch of different movies about a bunch of different things.
Understood.
Yeah.
He made me chuckle on the way out, though, because I was talking to him about, he said he really appreciated and liked how you guys did the interview. And I said, yeah, well, they've known each other a long time. Mm-hmm. They went to kindergarten together, grew up on the same street,
sure.
Same thing. And he goes, yeah, that's what I heard. And then he goes, so is this their only job?
that
weird, like he was being disrespecting radio. And I go, no, of course. And he goes, oh, okay, because one of them was telling me, He's a lawyer? And I go, I go, he hasn't practiced law in a day in his life.
That's not true.
How did that come up?
Oh, I just asked him how he went from novelist.
His
story is amazing. No, I didn't tell him that at all.
Because he went from lawyer to a radio host.
Okay, no, right. I just...
The Junkies movie.
You never know.
You could recreate it. It really had nothing to do with me.
All right.
I said, I'm a lawyer. EB's a grad student, or was a grad student. We started doing something
for
fun.
Did you tell him I worked at Toys R Us back in the day?
I only included Eric and I.
You said Jason was a lawyer, a bike grad courier.
Student. Yeah. I didn't mention that.
bike courier around the city.
Look, I think it went overall very well, but it's just a little bit of a face plant from Valdez there at the end.
It's all
just
right.
A little stumble.
I turned white.
Please don't mock me because I don't know all these guys' like intense bios.
Yeah.
But Alex looked like a guy I've seen like on award stages before. You know what I mean? Like,
well, he was nominated, I believe, for best screenplay for Ex Machina. I could double check that. Yes. But, I mean,
I've probably seen him, except like Golden Choice or you know, something. I've seen that dude before. 100%.
We felt a little pressure because we're trying to, I think we want to do more of these and have more actors and directors in.
Of course.
And then the first one we do is the most intense film ever, and we don't want to like disrespect them.
Right.
Well, also, the topic is so, you know what I mean? It's just a.
Did the PR girls like?
They were thrilled.
Did they like it?
Really they loved it.
They liked the Q&A. They liked the interview.
And then they're going to go talk to Kevin, who they love. Oh, my God.
I know. I mentioned Kevin
they're
back
all
here.
Smitten
they lit
by
up.
Kevin.
They lit up. They're going to go over there. You know, God only knows. Everyone loves. You got to imagine. Of course, they're going to love Kevin. Kevin adores everything.
Of course.
And, he's so fascinated by it all. I wanted to ask more sort of about the cinematography of the whole thing, the way they shot it. It was just so incredible, but, you know, didn't have enough time. But amazing they did it all in London.
In London, I thought we were talking about it, that it was filmed in California.
I saw shooting locations in Jordan, Iraq, London, and maybe one other spot.
I thought it was California.
He just shot that all down. I read the same thing.
It wasn't in any of those places.
There were some other like shots they put in there, but where they actually had the actors and everything. Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah,
because it definitely looks like Iraq.
Bobby feels like he got duped by bad information.
I don't know. Maybe you're very intense. You're tomahawking my chest.
Yeah,
well,
Ricky. No, I was telling you he was involved in one, not the other. You just weren't listening.
I don't
know. Because you had your fervor about to go talk to him.
I feel like this. I have no idea. Like, I don't know if it's going to be on a 100 screens or 5,000 screens. I feel like this is going to be a big one.
Well, I think it's going to be a wide opening film.
I think it's going to be a big one.
Yeah. I'm going to guess it's going to do very well.
Yeah, I think it's going to do really well.
Now, they didn't talk about what the budget was, but I'm guessing, I mean, I wouldn't even know what to guess the budget for that
movie.
Well,
they said on time budget.
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't any big-name actors.
Right.
So they're not paying any actors big money.
Big money, that's true.
They are paying for the CGI, the sound, and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So, But pretty fascinating. The dude just started. He went backpacking, EB. He went backpacking throughout Southeast Asia.
I would never do that.
Then turned it into a book.
He's an adventurous
guy. He's like 25 years old at the time.
I mean,
I didn't see the beach.
He's also a billion times smarter than us.
Of course. I'm sure I'm going to go to like the Philippines with just a JanSport backpack and start walking around and staying in youth hostels.
And then they make a movie about his book.
And then write about it.
Well, no, he didn't write the screenplay for that. So they took his novel, turned it into a movie, and he's like, I can do that. And now he's directing.
Yeah,
I know there was a lot of steps in between.
I know I can't do that.
I guess it's kind of like
complete opposite.
It's kind of like our former intern, Clank David. He starts in a mail room. Next thing you know, he's White Lotus.
Oh, well, speaking of White Lotus, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the latest episode, I think it's episode 5.
I think I'm two behind now.
There is a scene.
More male nudity?
No. Well, yes, there is more male nudity, a little bit.
They love it.
There is a scene of dialogue between Walton Goggins and, I believe, Sam Rockwell, where they're sitting in a bar in Thailand. And it is a mind-blowing 5 to 7 minutes. Is that about the length of it? Maybe
it's 3 minutes.
It's 3 minutes.
It's a three, yeah. Well, the dialogue's between 5 and 7.
The back and like forth between them.
There's probably like a two-minute soliloquy.
It's a jaw dropper.
Those are both excellent actors.
No, they're very accomplished actors. I think Sam Rockwell's won an Academy Award for maybe best supporting. He's a very good actor. But what he's talking about, I mean, is this how you throw a curveball? Two fingers up like this? Yeah.
Curveball?
Nice.
Yeah, curveball.
It's a big curveball.
Ooh, it's a curveball. I'm just telling you, just brace yourself for it. It's a wild one.
I might still be on episode 2.
Oh, you're so far behind.
I know. I don't know what's going on.
Is David blowing us off to pitch him? We just can't track him down, David Bernad?
No, after the end of last week, we didn't check back in. Wouldn't have been a good day to have him on last Friday. So.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm still into it.
He was into it. He thinks it's a great idea.
Who?
David.
Oh, I wasn't.
What do you mean? He doesn't know.
Is JP doing more legwork we don't know about?
No, he just said he was into the idea of coming on with us and us pitching him.
Ah, okay.
Oh, so you didn't leak it.
No details. No.
Didn't give him the treatment, did you?
No.
Okay, good.
I know that you have that one ready to go.
Yeah. It's 50 pages long already. My hand hurts from all the writing.
Your hand. Writing it by hand.
Sometimes I jot down notes. I'm old school, baby. Like Stephen King back in the day.
Dude, he said, I love this idea.
Of pitching him?
But he said doing it on Friday would be way better. And then Friday was the day that we talked about John's passing.
Oh, so maybe just fine. See if you can set up another. I have to tell you, when I was traveling on Friday, I was still particularly rocked by the Feinstein news.
Yeah, it was shocking.
It rocked me in a way that I wasn't prepared for, to be honest with you. And, you know, we talked about it. I don't want to belabor it, but all the people reaching out, all the people kind of stunned by it. It continued through the weekend, I'm sure, for you guys, too. I heard from people I hadn't heard from in years. But I just Friday in particular, I was really, I mean, it kind of rocked. It's all I could kind of think about all day Friday.
I keep thinking about Jane, to be honest with you. I know he had other children, and he touched hundreds, thousands of people, maybe millions with his books. But
dude, did we talk about this fact? Maybe I didn't realize it until later, but he sold 8 million copies of Season on the Brink.
That's
ridiculous.
Like, NSYNC doesn't even sell that many, like in their heyday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's an that's an unfathomable number of books.
Yeah, once
so many royalties, so many royalty checks from that book.
I mean, it's and then that was just the first of his big time books.
Yeah, I once sent him a text. I think, you know, at some sandwich shops, they'll have like books just hanging around. They're all kind of there, and sure enough, there was John Feinstein, Good Walk Spoiled. I took a picture.
Right, so you're having a ham and cheese. You just want to open up and read about the PGA Tour.
Hey, you know it was so awful on Friday after the show. Drab was looking around the studio and station trying to find John Feinstein books that he signed to put on eBay.
No, you're kidding. No, he wasn't. That was a goof.
That was a goof.
Yeah,
it had to be that's Valdez's idea. Whenever someone
feels that.
He was projection.
He was
mulling through a page.
He's got a stockpile of Jack Nicklaus memorabilia. Right. Yeah. He's waiting to unload.
He was page turning, looking for John's signatures.
And then, that book is not here anymore.
What a ghoul.
Yeah. And then the five banners book.
Right here.
No, the five banners book that's in there. He goes, this was John's last book he wrote. This could be worth something. Do you know he was doing that?
Really sick.
That was it. Was just
really sick.
Dark humor.
Gallows humor.
Yeah.
Okay. You need some love.
It was a tough day for everybody.
Yeah, to deal with the bad news.
I listened to our interview like 3 times. Like, Or just our discussions about it. I say interview. I don't know why I'm saying that.
Our tribute.
Yeah, I listened to that like 3 times on Friday. I was like rocked by it. Really weird. I mean, you know, obviously, person dies, but
anytime it's sudden like that, it just
anytime it's sudden,
it hits harder. Yeah.
But I also didn't know that I had some of those feelings for John, just for through all those years of knowing him and looking up to him, because we would spar. You know.
And we didn't have that many personal interactions.
Mm-hmm. Not a ton.
You know, handful.
Let's go to Dennis real quick. He's calling in about the interview we just conducted with the directors and writers of Warfare.
Dennis!
Hey, guys. Hey. How you doing? Good morning.
Hey, Dennis.
Great. How are you?
I've listened to you guys for a long time, and it's always I love hearing about sports. Not too often do I care about the movies and all that, but... Mm-hmm. This interview that you just had was the best interview of anywhere that I have ever heard. That interview alone had me sitting on the end of my seat.
Wow, well,
wait till you see the movie.
Dennis.
Very nice of you to say that.
I can't wait.
Yeah, go see it April
11th. Listen, it's not something that you're going to like.
It's
be
not
super
cheery.
Happy about. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's the atrocities of war.
I mean, it's intense, dude.
But just be ready. I do think it's important for people to see.
I was in the military, and people don't understand how ugly war is. It's just it's beyond what people can even begin to imagine.
Yeah,
that interview there just touched, I'm sure, every military guy out there.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of them listening. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. It's very nice of you to say.
I thought Jason's question at the end was excellent about his mentality and his how he feels now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I told him, I've got a friend who is former military. Now, he wasn't a SEAL, but he went through a lot of stuff. And every time I see him, I can tell there's something wrong with him. I can just tell. I can see it in his face.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say, dude, I just tap him on the shoulder and say, anytime you want to talk, I'm here. That's all I do.
Yeah.
So anytime I talk to a former soldier, I just say, oh, how you doing?
Right.
And that's a good thing
to check on.
And I guarantee you most of the answers are the same.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to Nationals opening day. So keep listening for your chance to win because it's coming up next. Thank you to the Washington Capitals for sending us some yard signs. You can display these out in front of your house as we watch Alex Ovechkin chase Wayne Gretzky's goal record.
Watching the Great Eight,
yes.
They're back at it tonight, right? They're playing Detroit, are they playing?
They're playing the Red Wings.
Cakes, you never look so handsome.
I know, I'm just dreamy. Look at me. Look at me over here.
I'm sorry. What are we supposed to do with those signs?
Like, there's a money metal stand that you stick into the bottom of it, and then you place it out in front of your house.
Put it in front of your house.
When people drive by, they say, oh, they're watching Alex Ovechkin score goals at a record pace.
Okay.
And they're watching the Washington Capitals be the number one seed in the East. All those good things.
Gotcha.
There you have it.
Gotcha. His last goal was one of those sick deflections.
Right in front of the net. Yep. Favre already put it on net. Alex Ovechkin just stuck his twig out in front of it. Boop.
Not very one-trick pony-ish.
That's not very one-trick pony-esque. No, not last time I checked.
He's
no.
now third in the NHL in hits in the history of the game.
Right.
300 more.
Yeah,
that's his next chase is 300 more hits.
Panger, that is not a one-trick pony move. That means he's like physically crunching dudes into the glass and hitting them on the open ice and all those good things.
Yeah.
Panger, still my public enemy number one.
I think it's going to
like him. You're never going
to
like him.
I don't think he's going to be able to outrun this one.
I don't think so. I think it's going to stick with him forever.
I think it's going to stick with him.
And stick with most Caps fans
even
forever,
if he had a public apology, would you still despise him?
I mean, he came on and tried to weasel his way out with a public apology here.
And I'm not saying by all accounts he's a good guy. Everyone says he's a good guy.
I'm sure he's a good guy.
I just think he his true feelings came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he showed his true colors.
True colors came out. And he just thinks that Alex is a bit of a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of his mindset.
I wore that shirt this weekend when I was in Fort Myers.
Very good.
It was well received.
I don't have much of a file on Fort Myers, Florida. Don't know much about it.
Yeah, it's just
not sure I could find it on a map.
It's a nice spot to head to, like in spring or even in the winter months, like January, because it's south enough that it's warm. It's very close to Naples.
Okay,
so
I've heard about Naples.
Yeah,
heard Naples is very bougie and foofy.
Oh my god,
a lot of rich people live in Naples.
Marco Island is pimping.
Yeah, it's baller.
Yeah, it's
really right nice. Right there. I stayed at Marco before.
Very good.
I went and I did the St. Patty's Day parade with the people in downtown Fort Myers, all the old drunks. We went out the first night in Naples with all the rich old drunks.
All right. Good.
You just saw rich old ladies dancing.
Oh, really?
Divorcees clearly trying to holler at people.
Hold on. Dancing like at
is live this like music. A... Like oh, all these okay. restaurants and bars had live music.
They're a bunch
everywhere.
Of happy people down
just
there.
Just a bunch of rich people.
They're just all retired. Yeah. They don't have to work.
Of course
and they
not.
Got loads
or
of money.
Were they there for months at a time?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
They're snowbirds.
Kind of. Yes.
Yeah, they go to Florida in the winter and then they come back here. Is that right? Yeah, that's the way it would work.
Here's what I would say.
They
come up here during the summer.
Here's what I would say. It's a great spot. If you ever thought, oh, you know what? I want to be a snowbirder. I'm going to get a place. Mm-hmm. That would be a good place because it you don't sense Laurel. You know, it's okay. It's better than
that. It's classier is what
classier.
You're saying.
Classier. It's a
higher class.
Yes. Yes. Whereas most of Florida, to me, is like Laurel with beach.
Most of Florida, to me, is like the commute from wherever we would stay toward the stadium in West Palm. Like, once you get to the stadium in West Palm, it's nice.
Yeah, West Palm's also very, very nice.
Like,
area.
The highway that you take from the interstate to get
to the Nats ballpark.
Yeah.
Ballpark of the Palm Beaches, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, with the dog track.
Kind of nuts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, I know that I know the dog track spot because I've seen flops there
I know
before. Back in the day.
I know you have.
Long time ago. Many, many moons ago.
How many hours yesterday at MGM National Harbor?
About three.
You were chasing the pot of gold.
Yeah, the pot of gold.
Look like you came home with the pot of gold. Gold price is up. It would have been nice to have a pot of gold.
I got the pot of nothing. Gold. I didn't get one drawing at the pot of gold. I was bitter. I was salty.
By the way,
they would announce it. Come down and do the pot of gold drawing. Some guy would pull out an envelope. Be like, oh, $1,000. Wasn't me.
I didn't spend enough time totally understand your tweet. Like, I thought that you had lost $200, which at the time you tweeted it. But what were the deuces? Did you have quad deuces at one point?
No, the high hand at that point I showed was quad deuces with, I don't know, an ace kicker.
Yeah.
Which wins a draw at
the pot of gold. So that wasn't your hand?
No, wasn't my hand. You think I got that lucky yesterday?
I don't know.
No chance.
You play a lot. Maybe at some point you get that hand.
I didn't get that lucky yesterday.
So mentioning the pot of gold, I mentioned earlier that Vin has this this tournament thing. You know, I said, I don't want to do it. I don't want to fill out the bracket. It's a pain in the ass. He goes, no, you just have to pick six teams. Mm-hmm. And Lurch, I think, is going to do one. He suggests that we do one as a group because we have six of us, six teams. It's $10. Would you guys be interested?
Sure.
Each pick one team. It's Grabby, fine. You want to be in?
It's
Valdez,
fine.
You want to be in?
I can do a team.
You get points based on seeds. So we'll have one junkies entry.
So, for into their pool or
yes.
We're doing one ourselves?
Yeah, into their pool.
Okay. All right. So we all pick one team. Okay.
And you, gotcha, and gotcha. Yeah, you can pick one seed, but you won't get as many points.
If we win, we're going to be split in six ways.
Yeah. I mean, how much money are we going to win?
Well, I mean, just for fun.
We're depends on how many entries.
Hey, you know, put it in a breakfast pot.
Hey, Vinny, look at this. We got these cheapskates chopping it six ways. Six-way entry.
I guess you could look at it. I haven't looked at it closely enough to see the permutation and how they sort of figure out
it's
the math
bucks,
on it.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? Like,
well, first place gets 50%. Second place gets 25%.
No, I'm saying, but how do they value...
Yeah, I know. Like
one win with an eight seed versus four wins with a one seed.
Well, no, what happens is you multiply the win based on the round. So in round one, you multiply your seed by 1 point. Round two, you multiply it by 2 points. Round three, you multiply it by three or 4 points. So if you take a five seed and they advance to the Sweet 16, well, they're getting more points.
It's such a menial amount of money that I'll donate mine to Valdez and Drab. I don't care. It'll be like
$4. Did Yale get like a 13 seed or something? What did they get?
13. They're playing A&M. 13.
They play who?
A&M.
I'm telling you, they could.
Remember, they beat Auburn last year.
They beat Auburn last year.
Yeah.
Why don't you pick them? Pick them for our
I might.
Thing.
I might. The problem is they're two star players. One's a shooter, big time. So if he's off, it could hurt, you know, to be over. And the other one is an undersized power forward that, you know, maybe A&M will just. You know, just
I was rooting,
swallow
I was rooting
up.
For,
yeah, swallow them up.
I was rooting for your Cornell boys. They made a little bit of a run.
Port Coop had a rough shooting first half, really strong. I've never seen him so rattled.
Yeah.
And then he did better in the second half. But yeah, it's just it was a shame.
Yeah, it was a good game though. It was fun to watch.
They gave him a fight. They had a great season.
Speaking of shame, I know we have to take a break soon, but I heard through the interwebs that you were club shaming Vinny and Joe. There was a lot of hey, EB's told us hey at his club they do this.
Vin was joking
this way, and they
Vin was joking.
Is that
and
what
people
it was?
Were taking him seriously? Yeah, no. I mean, I think I said one reason why I wanted him to play at our club.
Mm-hmm.
Like one thing,
right?
And he used
blows
that.
It out of proportion.
Yeah, he even said to me, he said, "I'm making fun of you here, just so you know."
Yeah,
you know, he's just trying to get attention to his tweets.
Got it. Well, you got my attention.
Does the pod still exist, or did that die?
Whenever.
On the vine?
Well, I mean, it's whenever we want to do it.
At their leisure.
No, yeah, I mean, we did it for fun, for about 6 months, and it just becomes hard, you know. It's only when you only see each other now a couple times a year.
Sure.
It's hard.
Yeah. All right. We told you to keep listening for your chance to win Nats tickets for opening day. Now is your opportunity. 10th caller right now at 800-636-1067. You're going to score two tickets to the Washington Nationals opening day Thursday, March 27th, as they take on Philly. First 20,000 fans get an opening day t-shirt. For the complete national schedule and ticket information, go to thefandc.com. 10th caller right now wins. Don't forget, when we come back, Gary Williams, former Terps legendary head coach, he will join us next on The Fan.